welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Hello and welcome back to the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. This is Jessica. I'm so glad to be with you for episode 132 of the show. If you're new around here, we interview different moms every week who share their motherhood journeys, and it's been so fun hearing from such a wide variety of moms. So thanks for tuning in every week, and if you're new around here, dip back into the archives and check out all the amazing moms we've had on the show so far. So today, I'm really, really excited because one of my podcast idols, I guess, is that bad? For a faith-based podcast that Jamie Ivey has, I probably shouldn't say that, but she is one of my podcast inspirations, shall we say that? The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey is one of my favorite podcasts, and I've mentioned it before here on the show, and today she is my guest. Jamie is a mom of four, and she lives in Austin, Texas. And today we're going to talk about her motherhood journey. We're going to talk about her podcast, and we're going to talk about lots of other fun stuff. If you don't already listen to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, you're missing out. You're going to want to add that to your queue immediately. But you're going to love getting to know her even better on our podcast today. So let's get to it with Jamie Ivey. All right. I'm so excited to be talking with Jamie Ivey today. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Jessica.
How's it going?
It's great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. You are literally one of the reasons I started my podcast. I remember you saying on one of your shows, you know, people always say like, oh, should I start a podcast or, you know, isn't it hard or whatever? And you say, you should do it. You should totally do it. If I can do it, you can do it. And that really helped me to believe that if I Googled how to start a podcast, I could actually follow through too. So this is 132 episodes in for us. So
wow,
there you go.
That's amazing. How often do you put out shows?
So I do it every Tuesday is a new interview with a mom. And then on Fridays, I do more of an informational shorter episode or a Mom of the Month award.
Congrats show. To you. That's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been so fun. And I'm sure you've seen that with your own show, how much it can change from the very beginning. Like you're not really sure who's going to listen or how far the reach is going to be or what it's going to evolve into. But I mean, I'm sure you've seen the same thing with your show.
Yeah, you just jump in and it's so right. I always say if I can do a podcast, anyone can do a podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, you just jump in and then you kind of start to figure out who's listening, what's my message going to be, who's my target audience, and those things start to form. And when you see those things form, which I'm sure that you have 132 episodes in, it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to definitely go more into that as well. But for people that maybe aren't as familiar with you, haven't listened to your podcast, I mean, I've sung your praises for the last year now, so they've got to have you on their radar. But will you just give a little background on you and your family, Jamie?
Yeah, I'd love to. My husband Aaron and I live in Austin, Texas, and we've been here almost 9 years. It feels like we've been here forever. We really love this city and everything about it. And so we moved here from living in Tennessee. We lived there for 5 years previously, and we moved to Austin because my husband got a job working at Austin Stone Community Church. He's the worship pastor there and head of over all the worship ministry. And so we've been here for 9 years. We have 4 kids. Our oldest is 13, and that's our only biological. And then under that, I have an almost 12-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
Awesome.
So that's it. And
yeah,
that's my family life. And then I do my podcast, The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, and also write and speak and do fun stuff like that.
That is amazing. When is your book supposedly due out? Like what's the schedule looking like?
Yeah, I'll be releasing my first book. It comes out at the end of January of next year. So January 2018 is when it comes out, which seems like forever away. And it seems forever away because, I mean, I started this process a year ago. So, I mean, it's a process.
It's a long time coming. Did you always want to be an author?
You know, I always felt as though I had a story to share. Mm. And so that always looked to me as though it would be a traditional route of, you know, publishing a book. And so it's always kind of this dream. But I'll tell you, and I openly say this, is that writing is not my first passion. It's not my first gifting. And then when I did the podcast, which is what I consider just a really just where I find my sweet spot, it kind of just opened up a bunch of doors. And so it kind of led to opening up the doors to writing a book. And so do I think I always would have written a book? Yes. I think that this has kind of helped kind of, you know, move it along in a faster pace than I probably would have on my own schedule. but I have always wanted to be able to share my story in written form. So I guess the answer to that is yes. It just didn't look the way I thought it would look.
And isn't that just life? I mean, sometimes we have these goals or these visions of what our future might hold, but when we cling too tightly to the way that's going to unfold or how that's exactly going to look like, a lot of times we're disappointed, right? But when we allow, you know, God to just guide our story and life just to unfold as it will and opportunities to come that you may not have expected, you never know exactly the puzzle pieces in what order they're going to all come together, but they usually do, right?
Yeah, it's so true. I think I always looked at the way that I would encourage women and share my story would be through publishing, through writing a book, but that was before my podcast. And so I didn't even think about a podcast. And so then when the podcast came along, I felt very fulfilled and I get to encourage women on a weekly basis, share pieces of my story, but you know, I just get to point people to Jesus. And so then I was like, oh, I'm still going to write a book. So this is still exciting. It was just kind of transformed. It kind of worked its way out a little different than I thought.
And you've been podcasting for 3 years now, right? Congratulations.
Thank you so much. 3 years ago, I started this May. Yes.
Okay. So let's just talk about the podcast since we're just already on that vein. What did you envision when you said in your mind, I think I'm going to start a podcast? You did a short stint in radio. You decided to start a podcast. What did it look like at the time? And kind of what did you envision it might be going forward?
Well, I think when I first started the podcast, I mean, I had this very, very, very short experience on a morning radio show. And so what I thought I was going to be creating was kind of like a morning show experience almost, where I bring a guest in, we talk about maybe current events, even though that's, I'm not a big current event person, but I thought maybe we'll talk about some like pop culture, current events, like silly BuzzFeed surveys, and then, you know, we'll talk about their life. That's kind of what I envisioned because that's what I had done in a radio program. That's, you know, you plan it out and you do different things. And so that's where I thought, and I look back now and that makes me kind of giggle, and it just transformed so different than I ever thought it would play out, because I started to just get my feet wet a little bit and started to do more of it. And I realized that the show I actually wanted to create is what we do now with the Happy Hour, is just a show where I invite someone on and we really get to talk about the way God's working in their life. Sometimes that works through their work, their family, hard situations, great situations. And so I think what I envisioned it to be was just like God has done exactly what he says he does, like makes things more than you even think they could be.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in the beginning, you talked way more about the Bachelorette recaps and things like that and the BuzzFeed, you know, type quizzes and stuff. And it's really evolved more into personal stories and the way God's moving, like you said. And I mean, there's value in all of it, right? There's value in just good friendships, good girlfriends, and being able to be honest and vulnerable in our conversations with our fellow women. And that's really what you're after.
For sure. And I think it just took me a little, if you listen from the beginning to the end, you'll see the transformation. It just took me a while to figure out what I wanted it to be.
Sure.
And I think once we figured that out, it's been great.
And I think sometimes we can look back at the very beginning, and like kind of cringe with, oh, the audio, oh, the content, oh, the whatever. But I don't feel like that at all. I feel like it's all part of getting to where you are now. And I love those interviews with your inner circle friends just as much as I love any of the interviews with the bigger names and the bigger people nowadays that maybe go a little bit deeper. But I think they all, you know, add to your life and are valuable conversations.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's a really fun job, as you know.
Yeah, it's the best. Okay. So now I want to talk about becoming a mom for you, Jamie. What did you picture when you thought, I'm going to be a mom? Like, did you have a vision in your head? And what was it actually like for you when you had your first child?
Yeah. So my husband, Aaron, and I were married in 2001. And we moved to Nashville about a year after we were married, with the intent of Aaron was going to pursue music full time and I was going to work. And we had our 5-year plan. I was going to work. I was a teacher. I was going to teach for 5 years. And then we were going to start a family. And lo and behold, we ended up pregnant a month after we moved. So, well, we probably been married about a year and a half. I don't know. The math is wrong. Whatever. It was way earlier than we planned on it. So we ended up unexpectedly pregnant, which at the beginning was really, really hard for us because we didn't have secure jobs. I mean, we were just kind of living on this prayer and a dream. We didn't have secure jobs. About 5 months into my pregnancy, we found out that we had lost our insurance. And so it wasn't the way that we thought it would work out, you know.
Sure.
But sure enough, you know, you become very joyful for a child, no matter the circumstances most of the time. And so our journey towards becoming parents was kind of fast and way sooner than we expected. But I look back now and, you know, it was perfect timing because then it led to all my other children. You know, without that first child, we wouldn't, you know, have gone as fast as we did with the other ones. And so becoming a mom was exciting because I always wanted to be a mom. You know, I just want my dream was to be a stay-at-home mom, have lots of kids, white picket fence, dogs, all the things. Mm-hmm. And so becoming a mom was super, it was an easy transition for me once we got over the, oh my gosh, we're pregnant. What just happened? That moment. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. And so were those early days just like blissful and what you thought they would be, or what were the hardest parts as well?
Early days of pregnancy or baby?
Baby.
Oh, the early days of baby were awesome.
Baby Caden, right? Yeah.
we were settled into, we're parents now. It was great. My mom stayed for like 2 weeks. I do remember leaving the hospital and thinking, they're really letting us leave with this person? Like, these nurses aren't coming with us. And so that's a little overwhelming when it's your first child. And, yes. You know, the funny stories about bringing home my son Caden is, you know, you bring the outfit that they're going to wear. Well, two things. Number one, I tell everyone this story because I was the first one of my friends to have a baby in my close circle. And so what I didn't know, Jessica, is when I packed my bag to come home from the hospital, I packed my pre-pregnancy jeans because I thought that I would have a baby.
Right. The baby comes out and you are back in shape.
I'm back in my size whatever pants. And lo and behold, you wear maternity jeans for like months.
For 9 months, you know, right? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And so I was, you know, kind of like stressed out that I had to put on my regular pants, I mean, my maternity pants again on the way out. And then my sweet baby was 9 pounds, 11 ounces. So his little going home outfit, he looked like that Chris Farley episode of like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. He's just busting at the seams.
Busting at the seams.
Oh,
and
no.
So we both wore our outfits home. Not in the happiest of spirits.
You were both busting at the seams, yeah.
We were both busting at the seams. But coming home was great. I mean, I look back and, you know, my husband traveled full-time in a band. And he, when we were at our one-week checkup for my son, the RV was in the parking lot waiting to take my husband away. And he was gone for a week. And so we just jumped in and did the best that we could. And I stayed home and I loved it. I was really, really blessed with a really great experience after we brought our little Caden home.
I love that. It's amazing that you can birth a 9 pound, 11 ounce baby. I mean, I had my third son, I have three little boys, and the third one was 9 pounds, 14 ounces, and I'm 5'1".
Oh my gosh.
Like, I'm a small person. You're a small person. That should not be able to come out of you that way. Oh. Like, hello.
I know. And I feel, though, I have these rights, and you do too. Anytime I talk about giving birth, I always tell people how much you weigh because I need everyone to know.
Everyone's like, oh, labor's so hard. I'm like, how big is your baby? And they're like, six and a half pounds.
Four?
I'm like, my kid is almost double that.
Yeah, I mean, none of the clothes fit him.
No.
I mean,
Oh, my gosh. Different size diapers, different size clothes. Yeah. Yeah. And so you adopted your following three children. Was that even on your radar as far as what your family composition would look like in the beginning? And how did that come to be?
Yeah, it's funny because people ask Aaron all the time, did you always plan on adopting? And we had never had one conversation about it before we got married, even in that first year of our marriage. Never. Not even on our radar. The church that we were attending at the time in Smyrna, Tennessee, which is outside of Nashville, you know, we're young and we're a young married couple. We have our baby and there are so many couples around us that are adopting from China. And so we're watching this unfold and we're seeing them add to their families. For the most part, most of them had already birthed 2 to 3 kids and then they were adopting a child and then, you know, more children, some of them. Mm-hmm. So we started watching this and it's when God started to kind of put adoption in front of our eyes. And so we just kind of really, God just pressed on our heart that this is how we were going to add to our family next. And so when Caden was about 7 months old, we went into the adoption agency there in Nashville. And we said, I mean, I look back and this is frightening because I don't recommend this, but we just walked in and said, hey, we think we're supposed to adopt. We don't know what we're doing. I mean, the naivety that we had in us, maybe it's what made our family come together because maybe if we knew more, we wouldn't have done it. But we just walked in and, you know, they told us we were young and we didn't qualify for a lot of out of country adoptions. And so they told us at the time, they're like, one of our greatest needs at this time, at this particular agency, was for domestic adoptions for biracial or black boys. And so we're like, okay, awesome. We're in. We have no preference on race or sex even. And so that's what led us to our next son. Deacon, and we adopted him domestically. He was born, him and Caden are 22 months apart. So that's kind of where that transition came through.
Wow. And how is that bringing in a non-biological child? Was that bonding period any different for you, or what did that look like?
You know, in this particular case, we were really, really unfortunate that Deacon's birth mom was induced. And so that was in San Antonio, and we lived in Tennessee at the time. So we were able to come down, and we were actually there at the hospital the whole day when he was born. And so we saw him that night. And, you know, for me, I had just given birth. I had just nursed a baby. And this is 22 months after I'd given birth and had been nursing for a year. And so I understood what that bond was like, and I understood what it meant. And probably my biggest fear in adoption, and I would voice it kind of like it was that whisper that I would ask other adopted moms, like, will I love this kid the same? You know, sure. And it's like, I didn't want to say that loud because people might think I'm bad. And they all assured me that it could take time. It could be different, but you know, hopefully you would. And so that was my biggest prayer. Like, God, just let me love this baby as if it was out of my own body. And so I'll never forget, after he was born, we knew he had been born, and they were taking us up to the nursery to visit him. And we're all standing outside the glass, like we're visitors looking in, and you know, there's, you know, seven babies in there, and we have absolutely no idea which one is our child. And then the social worker goes in there and tells them who we are, that we're the adopted parents. And then they go get my son, and they hold him up, and it still gets me. I still cry over it, because I remember in that moment, I felt, I love this kid, you know? Wow. And so it was like, God totally answered that prayer of mine. And so, we've had Deacon since the day he was born. And so, thankfully we have a great bond, with him. And, you know, our son was there, Caden, our oldest, and he was the first one to hold him. We always like, that's a fun fact that he likes to know. So that was a great transition for us. I mean, besides being tired because I had a 22-month-old and a newborn, that was, you know, the biggest deal. And we just stepped back into life.
That is amazing. And so what changed for you in terms of being able to pursue international adoption?
Well, from after that point, we had our two kids. Life was good. You know, Aaron was still on the road a lot. So we didn't, you know, we were still in Tennessee. We weren't close to our family, all those things. And so I started to feel as though I'm ready to add more kids to our family. And Aaron did not feel that way at all. And I'm sure that, you know, women that are listening, some people have had these conversations, and it started to become a real big area of tension in our marriage. Because I wanted my kids to be close, and I'm like, we need to move. I want to do something now. And he just felt really complete, as in this, we have our boys, we're good. And I just kept feeling as though I just don't think we're done. And so we had a lot of tension over it. And finally, I just decided that I was just going to like quit nagging him about it. And I really just prayed. And I really prayed. And I was sincere. I said, God, you change me or you change him, but like, we need to come together. And so, about a year into that praying, Aaron literally out of the blue just said, okay, I think we're ready to move forward. And you know, the thing is, we never, ever considered any more biological children. I have no idea if I can, you know, I've never struggled with infertility. But we just always kept going down that path. And so the next, child that we knew that we were going to add to our family is our son, Amos. And I had been to Haiti on a previous trip. And so we were kind of plugged in there. We were following a bunch of blogs from there. We were just really on our radar. And so Aaron was gone one weekend, and a lady that I followed who ran a rescue center there, they still run it. It's called Real Hope for Haiti. And they had a kid there that she posted on her blog one day. She's like, we're not an adoption agency, but we have three kids here that need families. And I saw, which is my son now, I saw Amos, and I cannot explain it besides that it was just God really impressed on me that I felt like, I think that's our son.
Oh my gosh.
We started moving forward with that, even though we didn't qualify for a lot of the ways with the Haitian adoption, but we started moving forward one step at a time. And then within a few months, I knew that this was going to keep going, and this was a third kid. And we had always said, if we adopt internationally, we want to adopt two children, so they have a commonality in our home. And so from there, we decided we wanted to adopt a little girl, and then Story came into the picture. So that's how that all came about. And then, you know, we go from two kids to four kids pretty quickly. Yeah.
What was the hardest part of having four? So once you brought home the fourth, what was the age range?
So when we were in the process of adopting our kids from Haiti for 2.5 years.
Okay.
And so by the time they came home, when Story came home, she was just shy of two, 1 month shy of two. And okay. So then when Amos finally showed up home, I had a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 4.5-year-old, and a 6-year-old.
Okay. What was the hardest part of that phase? Like, what just, like, sticks out in your mind about that time in your life?
Honestly, that first year is kind of a blur. It really
yeah.
is.
Memory?
I feel
yeah.
like, yeah. I mean, it was just a blur. Not only did I go from, like, 2 to 4, you know, in, you know, a matter of 3 months,
sure.
I'd go from 2 to 4 kids. But I also am bringing in, I'm not bringing home a newborn, you
right.
know, which has its own, you know, hardships, but I'm bringing home a 4.5-year-old, who has never had parents and never been in a family and never known love and all the things that make, that are some hard parts about adoption. And so the year is a blur. You know, I had 1 in kindergarten and 3 at home. I think looking back now, the hardest part at the time was I felt like I was out of control a little bit. I lost control.
Yeah.
And I think that's common, you know, when Aaron's at work, there's one me with 4 kids. And so that control issue was hard. And that's a really hard thing for me. I struggle with wanting control over all my situations in life. And that is not real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was hard. But looking back now, you know, being a little bit, our house is not like that anymore. I feel like some of the hard things was hard parenting, and I felt very sleep deprived. I felt like I wasn't bonding very well with some of my kids, and I didn't know how to do that.
Sure.
I have so many more tools in place now, but at the time I felt kind of alone, and some of the thoughts I was having, I think I could compare it. I've never struggled with postpartum depression, but I think I could compare it to that a lot.
Sure.
Because I just felt alone, and I didn't know how to reach out, and I didn't even know what questions to ask.
So how did you develop the tools in order to bond and kind of integrate your family as a whole of 6 people now more effectively? How did you work through that?
How did I work through that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think I can honestly look back and say, I don't think I did the best job that first year. And, you know, and I think it's okay for us moms to look
sure.
back and say, here's where I struggled, you know, and I honestly think one day I'll look back at my kids and say, man, mom had a hard time that first year. We all did. Everyone
yeah.
had a hard time that first year. And I think that was also hard for our family in particular, because we had a lot of people cheering us on for bringing our kids home. And it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. But it was really, really hard. And I didn't know how to say that to people because it was supposed to be beautiful to the outside world, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And so I don't think I did a very good job finding those tools. You know, I think once the kind of storm settled after like a year, maybe even to 2 years, my kids have been home 7 years now, we started to seek out help with counseling.
Mm-hmm.
6 months in, I was – no, not even 6 months in. 3 months in, I was at my doctor's office saying I had my first anxiety attack. I'd never had one before. I started having panic attacks. So I'm getting medicine, and I'm trying not to feel guilty about that, you know. And so I think it took us a good 2 years to get a rhythm with our family. And those 2 years felt like an eternity.
Oh, yeah.
You know, looking back now, I feel like that was forever ago. But I think, like, it was really, really hard, and I didn't know what to do. And I don't know that people around me knew what to do either, if that makes sense.
Sure.
It was kind of messy.
And you don't know what you don't know, right? And
exactly,
so even in the midst of it, it's like, well, would therapy even help us? Would medicine even help us? Would meals in help us? Like
yeah.
in the thick of it, oftentimes you don't even know what to ask for, even if you were cognizant enough to be able to verbalize it, you know?
And you're just in survival mode.
Yes.
So when you're in survival mode, counseling doesn't make sense.
No.
I don't know that counseling is going to help, because I actually just need to get to breakfast.
Sure.
We need to get to breakfast without anybody losing their mind.
Yeah.
So
hiring a house cleaner, hiring a house cleaner makes way more sense in that time frame than,
yes.
you know, going to a therapist would
yes.
in that
yes.
setting. Yeah, no, yeah. absolutely. Yeah. I just had an episode release a couple weeks ago called Why I Go to Therapy. And I just recently started going to therapy, and it's been such a powerful resource for me. I mean, I'm a happy, capable, motivated person, you wouldn't think I would go to therapy. But, and I know that you just mentioned that it's been so helpful to you as well. And gosh, the stigma attached to it, or the hesitancy to justify why you don't really need it, or why it's not really worth it, or whatever. It's so unfortunate, because there's so many tools that are there that you're just not aware of yet that can really just tweak your life in small ways to make a huge impact. Is that what you found?
Oh my gosh. I am such a fan of counseling.
Sure.
We'd been in it throughout off and on the years. We're in it now with one of our kids. I'm in it personally. My husband's in it last fall. Yeah. I mean, I want the stigma to be taken away. Mm-hmm. That there's something wrong with you if no. you need to go to counseling. But I'm happy to say I'm struggling. And so I need some help. Why right. would I want to sit in this, you know? And so I am such a fan of women seeking out some help. Because yeah. we all need it, you know? Right. And we can't all, do this alone.
Yeah, and we're all operating on the set of truths that are in our mind that may not be true sometimes, right? Right. Like we get these narratives going in our head and we're doing the best we can based upon what we know. But sometimes what we know isn't right or could be yep. improved upon or clarified. And then we could just be so much freer. Mm, and so yep. being able to like determine what are the narratives in our head, are they correct? And if not, replace them, you know, create those new truths that really serve you and get rid of the ones that don't.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's huge. And so you've also talked a lot about on your podcast about how much you enjoy this age and stage that your kids are in now. As they've gotten a little bit older, you can sit by the side of the pool instead of changing the diapers. And, you know, every parent kind of finds their stride in a certain season, I think. Every person's different in where they really excel, whether it's the babies or the tweens or whatever. And you seem to really be enjoying this kind of tween age, older elementary age. What are you really enjoying about this stage with your kids?
Oh my gosh. I do talk a lot about how much Aaron and I are enjoying this stage. Okay, what do I enjoy? Number one, I enjoy that they are self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I feel like if I tripped and fell and bumped my head and was knocked out for like 3 days, they could survive.
Like, we don't want that to happen. Survive.
So they're self-sufficient. We can have conversations, and their reasoning skills, which clearly they are not highly functioning until, you know, they're an adult, but they can understand more and they can reason a little bit more. We're not having like major meltdown fits. Now my daughter's 9 and we have some drama, but sure. you know, I think that we're in for that with a girl. but a lot of that's gone. You know, our oldest is 13 and it is just, he's fun. We have conversations. He's watching TV shows with us that are like, quote unquote adult. I mean, you know, they're not sure. bad, but they're like not for a 9-year-old.
Right. They're like thought provoking. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so we're like doing life with him and hanging out, and he wants to be with us, which is hard sometimes. So to me, this stage is just, it's a lot of fun. They're getting into like their grooves. Like one of my kids plays baseball, the boys play football and softball. And I'm a sports mom, so I love those things. So that's fun as well.
Absolutely. And I love how vulnerable you are about sharing your own story and everything, both on your podcast and it seems like just in life with your people, and that you really try and develop that type of transparency and vulnerability with your kids as well. How do you approach dealing with hard topics? Like, your family does not look like a typical family. You have, you know, multiple races and everything. And so how do you deal with topics like racism and, you know, those adolescence type things? How do you approach that with your kids?
Yeah, you know, one thing that Aaron and I have noticed a lot about kids and hard topics is that they're not the most prone to bring them up.
Sure.
And so I think a trap that we can fall into, and I think a trap that some of our parents and even older generations fell into, is if they're not asking questions, they're not thinking about it. And we just really, we don't think that's true. We think that our kids are thinking about these things, and sometimes they don't have the words to ask about it. And so for us, we want to be really intentional at bringing up the hard topics even when they don't bring them up. And so, which that means sometimes, you know, we'll bring up conversations about race. We'll bring up conversations about social media, or, you know, topics about, you know, sex. Like all of my kids, we told our kids about sex. We have the conversation starting when they're like 4. Mm-hmm. Only because, here's another clue. Some people are like, oh my gosh, I can't talk to my kids. It's not awkward when you talk to them when they're young. Honestly.
Sure, sure.
It's only awkward when you bring it up for the first time when they're 13.
Yes.
You know, I can say these awkward words in front of my 13-year-old because I want him to be comfortable talking with us about it. And because I want him to know that we know, you know, I think a lot of times yeah. when you're a teenager, you think my parents don't know about this. And I just want to be like, I know all the words. I know these things. And so
I know more than you do. Yeah.
Yes. I'll teach you more. So I know these things. And so for us, we just really want to be proactive in those things. You know, that's hard work because yeah. it's sometimes easier just to think if they're not talking about it, they don't think about it. And we've seen that when we bring these conversations up during tuck-ins or, you know, one-on-one or whatever it might be, they actually do want to talk about it. They just don't quite know how to say it. And we've done that with adoption as well. You know, we talk about our kids' stories, and, you know, we have an open relationship with one of our birth moms. And so those conversations, we just want to be the ones that are constantly pursuing our kids and letting them know they can talk about those things.
Sure. And do you usually plan those conversations ahead of time? Do you think about, okay, tonight we really need to address this? Or is it more spontaneous out of kind of what's going on in the family? Or is it more organic? How's that look?
I would definitely say they're more organic. Mm-hmm. I will hear something come up in conversation, or I will, you know, like, I'll give you a great example that I will bring this up tonight with my children. Because we had someone over at our house that spent the night, and they were just talking randomly. They said nothing wrong at all, but they said, I think I'm going to adopt some college kids this year, you know, and kind of let them hang out with us, those kind of things. And I saw all of my kids that sounded weird to them because they are adopted. And so, what did she mean she's going to adopt some college kids? And so I will bring that up with my kids tonight, because I don't know that they'll bring it up, but I'll bring it up and I'll say, hey, you know, this morning when we were talking and, you know, this person said they're going to adopt some college kids, did you think that was weird? How'd that make you feel? Because I want to put a better narrative in them. So if they have questions about that and they think that might be weird, or that may be uncomfortable, or they might not understand that, I want to give them the truths about that, that she's not literally meaning she's going to adopt them, right. You know, and that word can be thrown around a lot, but it means a lot to us and our family.
Sure.
Because they have really truly been adopted, and they're not just hanging out for like dinner every Tuesday. And so that's a great example. That will be totally, it's kind of organic because I heard it this morning, but I will plan on doing it. So I guess the answer is both, Jessica.
Yeah.
I guess I do it both ways.
Yeah. And I think that's really good. And as you approach new seasons in your kids' lives and things, like once they get a cell phone, once they get certain things, you know, to deal with something after something goes terribly wrong, or your kids are exposed to something that you knew they were probably going to be exposed to, but they didn't know that it was coming, right? You're doing damage control. And so to kind of be able to get in front of some of those issues that you know are going to be coming, but then in, you know, benign type conversations like the one that you just mentioned, it's like, oh, I'm going to follow up with that. You're not doing serious damage control on that, but yeah, addressing it seems like it would be really healthy and helpful. And I really like how you said, well, how did that make you feel? Or what did you think about it? Instead of you just imposing, she didn't really mean that. It's not a big deal. It's not real adoption. You know, you could like plug in what your thoughts are, but instead you're asking them. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
And it validates that their feelings matter to me.
Yeah.
I want to know, what does that make you feel?
Yeah. And I don't know if you want to talk about this, but a couple weeks ago you wrote about how your daughter's story was bullied at school for looking different. And did your mama bear instinct kick in where you wanted to do something different than what you know you should do or should say? How did you respond in that? Like, is your gut reaction as altruistic and noble and faith-based as, you know, you would hope it would be? Or how does that kind of look for you, Jamie?
Well, here's where I always land on kids being mean to each other, is I always land here. All kids are mean.
Yes.
And so I literally... That solves a lot of problems when we as moms don't feel as though our kids, and granted, there are definitely situations where your kid might be the one that's always getting picked on.
Sure,
I get
sure.
that. So that's a, you know, well, I'll just say that out there. But what helps me deal with these situations is I always remember that all kids are mean. All kids are seeking out to find approval. All kids are trying to fit in. All kids are trying to get people to like them. It's in us. It's what we do best. And as adults, we figure out how that doesn't work, hopefully, and we fill our lives with other things that matter. So when this particular situation happened and someone, you know, a boy made a joke, ooh, you know, someone joked and said, oh, your story, that's not our story, it's your girlfriend. And they said, ooh, no, she's black. You know, there was a part of me that thought, man, that is a hard thing, because I guess maybe he heard something like that at home. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Or maybe he's just a kid who's mean and thinks that he doesn't want to be around someone that's different. I don't know.
Right.
And so for me, I didn't get outwardly angry about it, because I do know that at some point, some little girl has had a conversation with her mom this school year, I'm assuming, and said story was mean to me. And so I want people to show grace to my daughter. And so I'm showing grace to this family and this kid as well.
Sure.
But it did bring out some really good conversations with our family. So we all talked about around the table about how possibly that is not okay. If he really doesn't like story as a friend because her skin is different. And we talked about how that still happens in 2017 and all of the things. And so it brought on a great conversation. But honestly, I wasn't too angry about the kid because a few things. He's nine, and kids are mean. And, you know, we dealt with it at home. And actually, the teacher dealt with it as well. So
sure.
At the end of the day, I felt okay about it.
Sure. Do you think the process of going through your adoptions and then having children from Haiti and a biracial child and things like that, do you think that's helped you develop that type of perspective? Or is that something that you've always kind of had in you?
I think the perspective of just like dealing with kids and kids are kids, probably when I was a teacher, helped a lot. But I, you know, the thin line for parenting kids who look different than you. So my husband and I are both white and we have black children. So the thin line is there is that I need them to be very aware of the harshness that the world is.
Sure.
I need them to be more aware of it than my son who's white because it affects them the most. And so the thin line is I need you to be aware, but I also don't want to kill your innocence when you're nine. And so, you know, we're walking the tightrope of, we probably talk about race in our family more than families who don't have children of different color.
Sure.
And so I think that that's a good thing. We should be talking about it. I think everyone should be talking about it. You know, there's my little opinion about that. but I think we have to talk about it more because it affects our kids more. And so I want them to be aware. I want them to know about it, but I also want them to be nine as well. And so that's where it's hard for me as a mom.
Absolutely. And I know that you interviewed Heather Avis, and I've had Heather on the show a couple times, and talking about her children and what their family looks like, her kids' Down syndrome, things like that, has really opened up so many wonderful conversations. I have three white children, you know, in my home that are healthy and, you know, typical, neurotypical. You know, so those conversations may not organically come up, but being able to draw in other families and other experiences outside of our home to expose them to all types of people and kind of role play and bring to their attention, you know, being friends with and accepting and being kind to all different types of people, no matter what they look like, no matter how they act or, you know, what they're capable of. It's been so powerful being able to use other families and other experiences like that to help us and my kids to learn.
Oh, yes. And I mean, I think parents, we have, I mean, social media, please tell me everybody that listens to this is friends with someone on Instagram or you follow someone on Instagram that has kids that look different than yours,
right.
Whether that be neurological, developmental, race,
yes.
Whatever. Those are great ways to just bring your kid in and be like, oh, look, this is my friend Heather and look at her kids. Aren't they cute? And let me show you and talk to your kids and be open about it. You
yes.
know, her daughter has something called Down syndrome and, you know, here's what it is. It doesn't make her a bad person. It just makes her different. And that's how God made her. Those are great conversations to constantly be having with your kids because otherwise we set them up to be out in the real world and not know how to handle differences.
Right. And you've seen adults like that who were never taught that, right?
Yes.
And
it's
those
awkward.
Are the, and
it's
those
awkward.
Are the people that are staring at you or that are making
yeah.
awkward conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are they doing that? Or you should do this or whatever,
yep.
you know?
Yes.
And it's like, they didn't learn those things from their parents. So we need
totally.
To do that with our kids, right?
Totally. Yes. Yes.
Well, I just love the work that you're doing on your podcast and just the message of promoting that God is working in every person's life and it looks so different in everybody's lives and everything. And it, there's so much we can learn through each of our own journeys and from other people as well. What do you hope for your podcast? What do you see in the future for it and where would you like it to go?
Yeah. I mean, one of my just most favorite things about the show is, you know, the emails and comments and things people say about just where it's meeting them in rough places.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love the opportunity to cheer on other women and I love the opportunity to point people to Jesus and the hope that he has. And so, you know, all along I've wanted the show to accomplish three things, to encourage women, inspire them and point them to Jesus. And so if we do those three things, I feel really happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've always set out to do is, you know, my show is a faith-based show. It is. But I want it to not be a cheesy faith-based show.
Sure.
You know, I want it to be a normal person's faith-based show. And I think we've done that really well. We've normalized, and I could get some pushback for this, but normalized Christianity, whereas you see real people walking through their life, like clinging to God. And that sometimes looks messy and that sometimes is hard. And I think that that's what I want people to see is the real life of people. And so I think we do that
mm-hmm.
really well and it's exciting. You know, I'm excited just to get more guests on, to keep growing it. We have dreams of the end of this year in 2018 to incorporate video and to do some video podcasts. And so that's going to be exciting. more live shows and just more ways to bring women together. So that's some of the things we have in the works.
I love that mission so much. And it just goes to show, you know, you have this set of talents and speaking to people and connecting and everything. Those are your gifts. And you could have put them in a box and gone a very conventional way of just sticking with, you know, regular ministry or, you know, something like that. But to be able to utilize this age of podcasting and technology and, you know, all these different mediums and really share those gifts with the world.
It's been so fun. It's been so fun. And who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Yeah, I know. Why do you think people love the show so much?
You know, I think that there is just like some authenticity that's there, some yes. vulnerability. I think people really are drawn to that. I know that they are. I mean, it's why we're drawn to, you know, someone writing a blog post that said, you know, I forgot to feed my kid dinner tonight. We like that because we like to see real women. And so I think that we do that pretty well at the show, is to bring that out. In real women and what they do.
I agree. And that can't be manufactured, you know, like if you're saying like, okay, if somebody asks you, how should I grow my podcast or how do I become bigger or how do I get more followers or things, you there's not like a recipe. If you're authentic, if you're vulnerable and people like you, like they will be drawn to you and they will share you, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I give my guests on the show the opportunity to do that because I've done it first.
Sure.
You know, like I'm willing to be open and authentic and vulnerable. And so then they feel the comfortableness to do that as well. And so then it creates an authentic moment that is not created. It's just kind of organic and happens.
Yeah. And I love that one of the things that you love to talk about is reading. And I've added so many books to my book list because of things that you've shared. So reading Anne Lamott and I had never read Shauna Nequist before, hearing you talk about her and things like that. So thank you for introducing me to so many new books.
Yes. And, you know, Shauna just released her own podcast.
Oh, I saw. I just discovered that. I can't wait to listen. That's amazing. Yes. So is there anything that you've read recently that you've really enjoyed that you'd recommend me picking up next?
Yeah. Okay. So we did this is kind of like parenting, so I'll start there.
Yeah.
We did a media fast recently, and I talked about just a tad bit on my show.
Yeah, how did that go?
We did 30 days of no media. And let me just be honest here, since my kids don't listen to the podcast, is when the kids were in bed, mom and dad watched TV. So there's that. But this was mainly for our kids. And so, and Aaron and I don't watch that much TV, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But so we did no media. 2 weeks in, they watched a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're past the media fast. And like last night, my kids watched a movie they watched a 30-minute show with Aaron, because I had something and they were having like this little family night. But man, we saw so much come out of that. And I read a book called Reset Your Child's Brain,
Four-Week
Plan to End Meltdowns, Raise Grades, and Boost Social Skills by Victoria Dunkley. And it's a kind of, it's not my favorite kind of read, you know, it's kind of academic read.
Sure.
And so I kind of read the parts I wanted to read, but I liked that book a lot and it kind of pushed us into that. And we give 2 thumbs up for the media fast.
That's great. And even if you just start with a week, right? It doesn't need to be a full
day,
but just a week. And a lot of times schools sponsor stuff like that too, where they want kids to get off screens. And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah. So great. So great.
Yeah.
Let's see. I read Chasing Slow this year.
Loved
by Erin Lochner.
Yes. She was on the show. Love her.
Don't you love her?
Amazing.
And then I'll tell you this one, Hillbilly Elegy.
Okay. I know that's on my list, but I have not read it.
I liked it a lot. Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, A Memoir of a Family and Culture in Crisis. I liked it because, well, memoirs are my favorite books to read by hands down. I love getting in someone else's story,
mm-hmm.
but it gave me this other inside view to poverty in America, which I did not grow up in poverty. And, you know, I've come from a very middle-class background. And so, but it gave me this view of like Appalachian Mountains, Eastern Kentucky, Tennessee, that kind of stuff, poverty. And so it was a really big eye-opening book for me. So
I love books like that. And I think it was Thompson who recommended that book to you.
Yes, it was Jessica.
Okay. So funny connection. So I'm listening to Jessica Thompson's podcast on your show. I'm listening. I'm like, her story sounds so familiar. Her kid's name sounds so familiar. I was her son Hayden's kindergarten teacher.
Stop it.
In San Diego. Not even joking.
That is hilarious.
And it was like 10 years ago or 12 years ago. And so I was like very far removed and not expecting that. I had no idea. So now it's so fun.
Did you reach out to her and tell her that?
I haven't yet, but I need to.
Oh, you totally should.
Yeah, I will. I will. So funny. Well, Jamie, I think you are an extraordinary mom. And I love the work you're doing on your podcast. I love how real you are. And I just love getting that in my queue every single week. I look forward to your podcast. I've listened to every single one, and I can't wait.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Each week. I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Anything?
Anything you want.
I think I would tell my pre-motherhood self, being in control of everything is not the biggest goal. Because I told you, I have control issues over here. And I think I tried to control a lot of things early in my kids' little lives that don't matter.
Sure.
And so I think that I had to do a lot of, like, I think I'm still having to do a lot of, like, makeup work from that. Mm-hmm. So control is good. We need to be in control of our kids and our families. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, I think I wanted to control a lot of things that didn't matter.
Sure. Controlling the right things, or focusing on the right things.
Yes. Yes. Like, oh, just too many things.
Amazing. So where can people find you to follow along with your podcast and online and everything?
Yeah. I would love for you to listen to the show. You can find it at jamieivy.com/iTunes. That'll take you straight to iTunes. Although if you don't use iTunes, you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Just find The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy. And then my favorite social media place is Instagram. I hang out over there, and it's at Jamie Ivy.
You're amazing, Jamie. Jamie, this has felt like one of your podcast shows that I've listened to for so long. This is such a fun conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
It is my honor. Thanks, Jessica.
Have a great day. Wasn't Jamie so amazing? If you haven't already put The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy in your queue, I know you're going to now. She was a fabulous guest, and she's an even better host. So check out The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'm trying to think some of my favorite ones. Tish Oxenreiter's recently was really good. Who else? Wynn Elder. I found a lot of people that I love following through her podcast in the past. Rachel Hollis's episode, Emily Lex, so many good ones. So check out The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy. Thanks for being on the show today. If you want to follow me on Instagram, you can do so at JessicaDahlquist3 or on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. And anything we talked about on the show today, you can find at ExtraordinaryMomsPodcast.com. You can see links to things. You can see pictures of Jamie and her family. And you can dip back into the archives as well. So thanks so much for tuning into the show today. We're having a revisit with Emily Dixon, our episode number one guest. Yay! And we're going to have her back this Friday to have a chat for some rapid fire questions and an update on how her family is doing. So thanks for tuning into the podcast today. I would love it if you'd share this with a friend. I would love it if you'd leave a rating or a review. It really helps new moms to find the podcast. Have a great day, everybody. And I'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.